morning, folks. Thank you so much for your patience this morning. This is County Supervisor Joe Simidian, and this is our telephone town hall on the COVID-19 virus. We appreciate your patience. We have had some technical difficulties this morning, but that is the least of our challenges or concerns during this very difficult time. As I say, this is County Supervisor Joe Simidian, and we're going to be spending about an hour, maybe a little bit more this morning, talking about the COVID-19 virus and perhaps most importantly, making sure we get to those of you who are on the line so that you can ask questions. If you do have a question anytime during the call, please press 9. That should put you in the line, the queue, for one of our telephone answerers to pick up the call and chat with you about what your question is and see if we can put you in the queue. So again, thank you for joining us. We are going to be joined this morning by Dr. Sarah Cody, who is our public health officer, and is by Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, as well as by Dr. Mark Adams from El Camino Hospital, and by Dr. Yvonne Maldonado, who is the Chief of Infectious Disease Control at Stanford University. So thank you to all of them for being with us this morning.
Is there
and thank you to all of you for joining. And I apologize if there's any crosstalk on the phone, but we're going to try and eliminate that as quickly as possible. Once again, this is County Supervisor Joe Simidian, and I represent the 5th District here in Santa Clara County. That's the northwest portion of our county. And some of you I have worked with and known over the years in my prior roles as a member of the California State Senate and State Assembly, and prior to that as a local mayor and school board president. Again, we have Congresswoman Anna Eshoo with us. Congresswoman Eshoo, of course, represents our 18th Congressional District, which includes portions of San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties, and has been serving us in Congress since 1992. I should mention that Congresswoman Eshoo, and again, delighted to have you with us today, Congresswoman Eshoo is someone who knows exactly what we're up against and what we're dealing with because she served for a decade as a county supervisor in San Mateo County. So as I say, she understands the challenges quite well. She currently chairs the House Subcommittee on Health Matters and is co-chair to at least two or three other health care and emergency-related committees. So again, we appreciate her being here as a resource. And then, as I say, we have Dr. Mark Adams, the Chief Medical Officer at El Camino Hospital, who will be joining us. Dr. Adams has experience in other parts of the country, including the Pacific Northwest and the Midwest, so he brings a national perspective. And then Dr. Yvonne Maldonado, who is the Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Stanford Medical and also the Director of Infection Prevention there. And control at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford. So really a very good lineup. Again, apologize for the technical difficulties. Also sorry for those of you who are recognizing and celebrating Palm Sunday today. We've learned over the years there is no perfect date, so we just pick a date that we think will work for most of the folks we call, and we're hoping that most of you now are on the line for this discussion of the impact of COVID-19 on our county and the county's response so far, as well as talk a bit about what you can do to keep yourself healthy. Appreciate the flexibility of our panel participants as well. We've gone a bit back and forth, but my understanding is that Dr. Sarah Cody, who is our public health officer and our public health director here at the county, is on the line. Dr. Cody, do we have you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We've got our technical challenges overcome. And I should just mention by way of introduction, Dr. Cody is someone I've worked with closely during the last 7 years that I've been back on the Board of Supervisors. She is a local Santa Clara County product. She lives here in the county. She got her undergraduate degree in human biology from Stanford University and her MD from Yale University School of Medicine, a background that suits her well to this current challenge, thank goodness. She had a fellowship with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention early in her career, dealing with epidemiology and public health. She's been here at Santa Clara County for more than 20 years now and took on the public health officer role in 2013. So Dr. Cody, let me begin with you, and again, a reminder to any of our listeners that if you'd like to ask a question, please press 9 at any time, and we'll get you in the queue. Dr. Cody, I want to ask sort of the 1, 2, 3, and you and I have had these conversations before, so I don't think this will come as a surprise. First question is really just from a public health standpoint, could you sort of recap for folks what's happening in Santa Clara County and how serious is the situation? I think that's the sort of the bottom line.
Thank you, Supervisor Simidian. So I'll just cut to the chase and give you the top line message and then step back with a little bit more context. I would say that I am cautiously optimistic that the early action that we took here in the Bay Area and the extreme measures that we have in place will help us avoid a worst case scenario. It does look like the outbreak is growing more slowly as compared to other areas, but we are by no means out of the woods. So just remember that we were one of the first places in the country to report a case and one of the first places in California. And that was in late January, early February with our travel-related cases. And then we were just the second in California to report a case of community transmission. So it did start early right here in our county, probably reflecting the fact that we traditionally have a lot of travel back and forth to Asia, both for personal and professional reasons. But the good news, again, is that the early action that we were able to take here in coordination with other Bay Area counties has slowed things down. So the outbreak is growing, but not as fast as it would have been growing had we not taken those actions.
And Dr. Cody, just to follow up a little bit on the sort of issue of seriousness, as we've talked in the weeks past, my sense is that, you know, both from what you shared with our Board of Supervisors and the Health and Hospital Committee where I serve, that perhaps for 80% of the folks who end up with the virus, it may not be terribly problematic, but for the remaining 20% or so, it could be either serious or critical. Is that a fair summary of what you've shared with us to date?
That's right. And if I had to like zoom in to what the core focus of the work, it's to prevent people from becoming seriously ill, being hospitalized, and dying. So we're taking these actions to slow things down. That's giving our acute care hospitals and other facilities additional time to prepare so that when and if the most vulnerable among us get sick and require hospitalization, that those resources will be available.
Well, thanks. You anticipated my very next question, which was what steps are being taken to push back on the virus and keep county residents safe? And again, as I understand it, and as you've shared with our Board of Supervisors, it's really a two-pronged strategy, and it's let's flatten that curve, as you keep telling us, and let's ramp up our hospital and healthcare capacity. And if we do those two things well enough and fast enough, then we can keep our healthcare system from being overwhelmed by the number of cases. Is that the strategy?
That is exactly the strategy. And to that end, many listeners may not know that the County Emergency Operations Center has been stood up for a number of weeks. This is an all-hands-on-deck effort by the county in collaboration with many, many, many partners. And one of the core areas of work is hospital surge planning. So we have a huge team here that's working with each hospital to ensure that each hospital can expand their capacity to the greatest extent possible, and also to think about what extra capacity do we need to build in case hospitals need to other places for patients to go. It's an extraordinarily complicated effort. Another big body of work is we're thinking about people living in our communities who one might have a greater chance of getting exposed to this virus, and two are going to be need more resources if they do become ill. For example, people experiencing homelessness or with unstable housing. We have a whole other body of work specifically to address housing, and we've been able to house many people who are at greatest risk or people who aren't housed and have COVID-19 so they can be isolated and not spread to others.
Thank you, Dr.
Many
Cody.
Many complicated moving parts, yes.
But as to the both the number of cases and the growth and flattening the curve, as well as this issue of trying to surge, as we say, or ramp up our hospital capacity, the number of hospital beds, the number of intensive care units, all of that is readily displayed on what we call our dashboards at the public health page. Am I remembering that correctly?
That's correct. On the Public Health Department website, which is www.sccphd.org, there is a dashboard, and there's actually three different dashboards. The first will show you the number of cases by day, as well as number of deaths. The second is a hospital dashboard that's really a roll-up of all the hospitals in our county and their current capacity, as well as how many COVID-19 patients are being cared for across the county. And the final dashboard is around testing, how many tests have been done to date, how many are positive, and how many are negative.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And again, for those of you who didn't catch the address, it's easy enough to simply Google public health coronavirus, you'll get right, Santa Clara County Public Health coronavirus, you'll get right there, and the information is displayed, I think, very clearly. So thank you. I know that's a source of some comfort to people, Dr. Cody. The last question I want to ask before we go to members of the public who have questions, and again, all you have to do is press 9 to ask your question. But the last question, Dr. Cody, before we go to members of the public is, the public would simply like to know, what can and should they be doing to keep themselves and members of their family safe? So I know it feels like you've given this advice over and over, but again, if you're just a member of the general public, if you're one of the folks who's listening in right now, what's the best advice we can give on how they keep themselves safe and their families?
Two words, stay home. Stay home. And to expand on that a little bit, stay home and do everything you can to help your friends, neighbors, and family members do the same. So the only members of our community that should be going out is those who are performing an essential function or if you need to go out to do essential business. And what I want to say is when you do need to venture outside your home, for example, to get groceries or medical care or pharmaceutical goods or such, to be exquisitely careful about practicing good social distancing. And 6 feet is just a minimum. So more is better, less time outside when you might be in contact with others is better. But we also understand that people need to get their basic things done. Just do it as carefully as possible and stay home, stay home.
Thanks so much. We have a call from Richard Keller, a mental health question. I'm going to ask our screeners to put us through and let Richard come on the line and share his question. Richard, can you hear us? And if so, what's your question today?
Actually, it's Arthur Keller, not Richard Keller. And thank you, Supervisor Simidian, for organizing this town hall.
Thank you, Arthur. What's your question today? We can. What's your question today?
My question is that we know about the physical health crisis, and it's a bad one, and financial crisis that is coming along with it is also a bad one, but there's a looming mental health crisis that is coming in its wake, I'm wondering what the county is doing about that.
Thank you very much. Let me go to Dr. Cody and ask if she can respond. Dr. Cody?
Thank you for your question. We are well aware of the of this and the extraordinary challenges of having people staying at home. We do have folks from our behavioral health services who are embedded with us in the emergency operations center. They're also working very closely with our housing folks. I don't have a tight, good answer on that body of work, but what I can tell you is we'll make sure that Supervisor Simidian has details and can share that back. I don't have all the details about the activity going on, only to tell you that it's not just a concern here, but really a concern everywhere across the country.
Thank you, Dr. Cody. And I should mention to folks who are on the line that in addition to the Santa Clara County Public Health Coronavirus webpage, if they go to my Supervisor Simidian webpage, we do have a list of resources there, including the issue of behavioral health. So we'll try and update that in response to the interest and certainly understand the importance of addressing mental health / behavioral health issues. We have another question from John in Palo Alto, which I believe is about local hospital supplies. Let's go to John, if we could, please. John, are you there, and can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Yes, that's what my question's about. I just wondered how the local hospitals are doing in terms of PPE and other supplies. We hear a lot of stories about they're looking for, you know, some places even are looking for homemade masks, and I just wondered how our local hospitals are doing, and is it to the point where, you know, if we find old thermometers and dust masks that you know, lying around the house, that they would be wanting those?
Dr. Cody?
Thank you for the – yes. Personal protective equipment, or PPE, is a huge concern. I would say that there's variability among the hospitals in our county as to supply levels. One of the bodies of many bodies of work that we have underway is understanding in detail the supply level of all those various types of personal protective equipment, not just in our acute care hospital, but in our skilled nursing facilities, such that when a facility needs something, that we can take the supplies that we have and distribute them in an equitable manner. It probably, you know, if you have a few masks here and a few masks there, that's not what will be needed. But people who, for whatever reason, if you have a large store in your home, we are devising ways such that those can be donated and then distributed to the area where they're most needed.
Thank you, Dr. Cody. And how should people reach out? To whom can they make an inquiry about whether what they have would be helpful and how to share it if they are inclined to do so?
Supervisor, I will get that information to you for you to put on your webpage. I know that we have organized donations for other types of services and supplies. I'm not sure that we've organized our PPE donation from members of the public yet, but when we do, we'll have it on our webpage, and I'll make sure that you have it on yours as well.
Well, thank you. We will put that information up on the page. Let me see if we have another question. I believe we do, and that question is from Devin, who has a question about internet access for lower income folks. Devin, are you on the line with us? All right, we'll go on to our next caller then. We do have another call from William in Los Gatos who has a question about testing for asymptomatic people. So, William, are you on the line with us?
Yeah, hi. This is William. It's not the most pressing, but I'm sure I'm not the only son or daughter with an elderly parent that needs a visit and assistance, and I hesitate to visit because I don't know whether I'm asymptomatic or not. And with a 98-year-old mother, she's left on her own. How is it possible to get a test without being critically ill?
Dr. Cody, where do we stand?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Where we are with testing is not where we want to be. We had anticipated that with the commercial sector coming online, that there would be widespread testing available. To be perfectly blunt, that is not the case. So you can see that to date, less than 10,000 patients in our county have been tested. There's a number of reasons, some known to me, some not known to me, about the challenges for commercial laboratories to scale up testing. But the fact is that at this moment in our county, there's not there are not enough tests, and so we're still having to prioritize testing for people who are symptomatic. And I hear you with regards to wanting to know whether you can be in contact with a member of your family that's vulnerable. I have the same issue in my own family. It is very challenging. But at this point, we do not have the testing capacity that we need. And we've tried to have an impact on the parts of the system that are within our control. Unfortunately, much of it is not within our control. One of the things that we did in our county to try to just at least understand where we were with this is I issued a health officer order on March 24th mandating that laboratories report to us if they are testing a person living in our county, and that we want to know both the positive and negative results so that we can understand how much testing is being done. And it's not as much as we need, far, far from it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Cody. We do have another call or two queued up, another question or two queued up. And I should say, again, that if you'd like to ask a question, you simply press 9, and we'll put you in the queue and get to your question if we can. But we have another call from Ward, who has a question. Ward is in Palo Alto, has a question about the status of the antibody tests. Ward, are you still on the line?
I am. Greetings. So I know the last couple of days Stanford was doing a small trial on antibody testing. Obviously, knowing if you've had COVID and have recovered is the way this ends, by turning susceptible into recovered. What do you know about that, and where are we with ramping that up?
Dr. Cody?
So you are, yes, you are correct. A group at Stanford did do antibody testing. This was to get a sense. It was a convenient sample. In other words, people who went onto an app and signed up were tested, but it covers all of the geographic areas of the county, so we can infer how representative of the county it was. This will give us a little bit of information about how much of our population might already be immune, maybe some insights as to how long the virus may have been circulating in the county undetected by us. The question, though, of when will an antibody test be available to anyone who wants to know their own status, that I don't know. It may be some time off. The antibody tests that are coming online right now, there are many, many, many of them. I know the researchers spend a great deal of time vetting the tests that they were using. There are still a lot of questions. For example, if you have a test and it shows that you have the antibodies, are they protective? How long are they protective? And we don't have clear indications about that at this point, although we are cautiously optimistic and hope that antibody tests will be a tool that we can use in our response.
Dr. Cody, Supervisor.
This is Dr. Maldonado. I actually can help with that since I'm at Stanford and we're doing those tests right now, if you'd like me to weigh in on that.
Please do, Dr. Maldonado, and then I have a follow-up for both of you.
Okay, yeah, so this is Dr. Yvonne Maldonado from Stanford University School of Medicine, and we actually took two steps. First, we actually tested a number of kits that were available, and so one thing you might want to know is there are a lot of online kits being sold out there. None of them are FDA approved, so these are just tests you can use yourself, but it's not clear how well they work. That is, are they really, if you get a positive, what does that mean? If you get negative testing, what does that mean? So we actually took a number of those test kits here at Stanford and looked at them, and none of them really were up to the standards where we felt would be useful in helping people understand their antibody status. And we did receive FDA approval for our own test on Friday. We will be starting limited degrees of testing this week just to see if we can understand how to interpret those results. And as Dr. Cody mentioned, having evidence of an antibody may or may not mean you're protected. We will determine that based on other studies. to see if the antibody you make does actually kill the virus in an experimental laboratory setting, so we can infer that. The second thing we would like to do is find out how long does that antibody last. And the third thing, which I think is even more important, is if you have antibody and you are protected, does that mean you can get reinfected, not get sick, but then infect other people? So those are things that we really need to learn, and we're hoping to learn those in the next few months. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both, Dr. Cody and Dr. Maldonado. I want to try and sift through a lot of information and pull out a couple of points that I think are particularly important for listeners. The first is, Dr. Cody, you're making a distinction between a test that someone might take to determine whether or not they currently have the coronavirus and an antibody test to let us know whether they have had coronavirus. Am I getting the distinction correct?
That's correct. So, for example, the testing that we're reporting on our dashboard is the test that shows whether you currently have the coronavirus. That's a test that looks for the virus. The antibody test is a test that looks for antibodies to the virus. Do you have signs that your body has seen the virus and made antibodies to it? And what Dr. Maldonado is sharing is that there's the antibody tests are newer. There's many questions about them. And I'm delighted, Dr. Maldonado, that you're answering those.
Well, Dr. Cody, let me ask you one other follow-up question. Somewhat counterintuitively, perhaps, would it be good news then if a high percentage of people had a test result that indicated that they had had the coronavirus? Because that would mean that it's already passed through and they'd been relatively healthy and they were now perhaps protected going forward?
Right. We're interested in knowing what percentage of our population may have already been infected, and then if we learn that the antibodies are protective against new infection, and if then that means that there's at least a proportion of the population that would not be getting infected and not be infectious, which is one of the many variables that's important for us to understand.
So just to drive home the point, and again, please correct me if I am misstating it, but I don't want people to be concerned, disconcerted. If it turns out that percentage number is relatively high, that unlike the testing you're doing to determine who currently has the virus, these antibody tests, if the numbers come back relatively high, that's not a bad thing.
No, yes? That would be a good thing. But I'm not anticipating that that they will come back that high, not high enough to be, you know, protective across the population.
All right, thanks. We have time for just a couple more questions with Dr. Cody, including one from Denise in Sunnyvale. Denise, if you're still on the line, I understand you've got a question about the website and what it does or doesn't show. Are you still on the line with us? Let me ask one more time if Denise is on the line from Sunnyvale. If not, Dr. Cody, I'll ask the question on her behalf. Apparently, she has a question about whether or not our website can show the recovery from COVID in some way, shape, or form. Thoughts about that?
We do not have those data to track patients to know whether they've recovered or not. Early on, I think we were listing that, but now with over 1,000 cases, we don't have that level of detail on each case to be able to know and to share the information.
All right. Then let me just look to my folks who are tracking our questions online. And again, if you have a question for Dr. Cody or for Congresswoman Eshoo, who is coming right up, and thank you for your patience, Congresswoman, or for Drs. Maldonado and Adams, who are going to help us close out the conversation in a little bit, just press 9. You just press 9, and your question will go into the queue. Let me go to Julia, however, in Los Altos, who has a question about protecting seniors, particularly in senior facilities. Julia, are you still with us on the call, please?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
And would you
I have a question. My father-in-law is in a Sunnyvale assisted living situation, and they called us yesterday and said that one of their patients, or not one of their patients, one of their workers tested positive for COVID-19 and was sent home. I'm just worried, and what is the next steps for this?
Thank you for the question. This is a big concern because skilled nursing facilities and long-term care facilities and assisted living are where some of our most vulnerable residents are living all together. We have had outbreaks in a number of different skilled nursing facilities and long-term care. So what we are doing is, one, we have a team that can consult directly with the facility. The key is to make sure that we can identify as early as possible either a staff or a patient with infection, the staff so that we can remove them from working there, and the patient so that we can isolate them and have them cared for in a place where they're not going to infect other patients. It's challenging, as you can imagine. But we have a fairly large body of work in our response, learning from Seattle King County, Washington State, and their experience. And it's something that we're quite worried about. So know that when we identify a staff member or a patient who is infected, we have procedures in place to remove them. The challenge is that with this virus, people can be shedding and be infectious before they have symptoms, or even if they never develop symptoms. And so we're asking, at this point, everyone in facilities are wearing a mask or other kind of face covering to prevent them from or help prevent spreading of infection and transmitting the virus, even among those who aren't symptomatic.
Thank you, Dr. Cody. We're going to move on to a quick poll and then to our Congresswoman, Anna Eshoo. I don't know if you're able to stay with us on the call, but we very much appreciate your making yourself available both to explain and respond to the questions that we've had, and obviously for the work you and your team are doing. So thank you for all of that. I do want to remind listeners that as we go through the call, if you have a question, please just press 9 and we'll try and get there. But before we go on to our next segment, I wanted to share with you all that it's interesting to me the range of issues that I hear people express concern about. And I'm curious and want to ask for your help today with a quick poll as to sort of what's uppermost in your thinking, your concerns. I've got some folks who are most concerned about elderly and at-risk relatives and friends. I've got others who have expressed concern about the ability of our healthcare system and our hospitals to respond to the outbreak, to essentially be able to sort of keep up without being overwhelmed, as we discussed earlier. Others have expressed concern about the loss of jobs and the economy as a top priority. And still others have been particularly concerned about the loss of educational opportunity for students at every level, K through 12 and at the higher education level as well. I'm sure these are all important to all of our listeners, but I would appreciate it if we could get you, and I'll repeat the numbers twice here for folks. If you are most concerned about elderly and at-risk relatives, if you could press 1. If you are most concerned about hospitals and medical staff's ability to respond, press 2. If you are most concerned about the loss of jobs and the economy, please press 3. And if you're most concerned about the loss of educational opportunities for students, both K through 12 and higher education, press 4. So again, press 1 for elderly and at-risk relatives. Press 2 if you're most concerned about hospitals and healthcare systems' ability to respond. Press 3 if you are most concerned about the loss of jobs and the effect all of this is having on our economy. And press 4 if you are most concerned about the educational opportunities being lost by our students K through 12 and higher. So thank you. Please let us know what your thinking there is, and we will, as you're pressing those buttons, move on to our friend Congresswoman Anna Eshoo. And again, by way of introduction, I should mention that Congresswoman Eshoo represents the 18th Congressional District which includes portions of San Mateo, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz counties. So she is seeing this challenge from many different perspectives in the community she represents in those three counties. She's been serving in Congress since 1992, and critically, I should mention that she currently chairs the House Subcommittee on Healthcare. We appreciate her joining us here today, and as someone who knows of Congresswoman Issue's work for a decade as a county supervisor in San Mateo County, I know she knows what we're going through. So, Congresswoman, thank you for your patience today. Thank you for making time for us. Welcome to the conversation.
Well, thank you to you, Joe, for bringing us all together. My thanks to the professionals that you have brought into today's town hall meeting. We all learned from them, and we're very grateful to them for their very special leadership during this critical time in our community and our country. So thank you for bringing us all together.
Congresswoman, for the most part, I want to look forward. I want to sort of confront the challenge that we're facing today and sort of where do we go from here. But I got to say there's one question I keep getting from my constituents that is a little bit of a look back on what happened. And that is, what were the major impediments that delayed the distribution of coronavirus tests, not just to our county, but to places around the country as we were seeing the early onset of COVID-19? You heard Dr. Cody express continuing concern, even this far into the effort, about the lack of testing resources. Do you have some sense of what the impediments were, what the problem was at the federal level that put us in this predicament?
Well, I do. There obviously have been many levels of dysfunction. Instead of a coherent, urgent, effective, across-government plan, that has not taken place. I think the most consequential failure, Joe, involved a breakdown in the efforts to develop a diagnostic test that could be mass-produced and distributed across the country so that agencies could map early outbreaks of the disease and impose the quarantine measures to contain them. Now, in order to stem an outbreak or to slow it, you have to have the ability to quickly divide the population into those infected and those not. You have to have an accurate test and deploy it rapidly to labs across the country. The time it took to accomplish this in our country may have been more costly to American efforts, I think, than any other failing. Now, the CDC, as they have done with other outbreaks, developed and sent out tests. Except the tests that they developed and sent out were faulty, and they had to be recalled. So we lost almost 4 weeks, on the heels of that debacle, the administration then put out a call to the private sector, and many people have heard the names of the labs that the administration put the call out to. But we've been playing catch-up ever since the CDC putting out that first batch of tests. In fact, the FDA reported how upset they were with how those tests were done and that if it was a private sector facility, they would have shut it down. This is not a pretty report. I recognize that. But you're asking a very important question, and we've been playing catch-up ever since, and as I said, we lost such highly valuable time because the virus continued to spread, and we still have a shortage of the original test to see if someone actually has the virus or not.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Moving on to sort of how we make progress looking ahead at this point. I'm curious to know what actions, if any, at the federal level you think are most relevant to helping Santa Clara County flatten the curve looking to the weeks and months ahead. As you heard from Dr. Cody, and I know you've been hearing this over and over again, for us, sort of job number one is to flatten that curve, not only to reduce the total number of cases, but to slow the rate of new cases. What's happening at the federal level, if anything that you can share with us that might give us some reason to believe we can do an even better job at flattening the curve, slowing the growth?
Well, the person that that I trust the most at the federal level is Dr. Fauci. What he says, what he recommends, what he's actually pleading with people to do. In my view, the administration should have had declared a national emergency and put in place the stay-at-home order, as Dr. Cody mentioned. That was the most effective step that was taken by the six Bay Area counties, and we're seeing the results of that. So while they seem really rather simple, they are essential to stay at home, to practice the physical distancing. Now the CDC has put out another directive, and that is masks if and when we go out to the pharmacy or to do grocery shopping, that people should do that. And then there are the other steps where we've been told wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, avoid touching your eyes, your nose, or your mouth with unwashed hands. Avoid close contact with people who you think are sick. Clean and disinfect any objects and surfaces you touch. Cover your mouth and nose when you cough or sneeze. Throw the tissues away and wash your hands again. As I said, they seem so simple, but they are really the essentials, and Dr. Fauci has stated that over and over and over again.
Got it. Thank you. And just so you know, I am literally putting some alcohol-based sanitizer on and rubbing it into my hands as we speak. So I'm trying to take that direction. Let me ask you on the economic front, the $2.2 trillion relief package, if I remember the number correctly, was passed by Congress, signed by the president. It sounds like a significant number, I think, to almost all of us. But if you could share what the highlights are that will be important to folks here in Santa Clara County, and then also you're thinking about will that be enough and what else is on the horizon? So the $2.2 trillion relief package is the question I wanted to ask you before we start to take questions from members of the public who are listening. And again, all they need to do is press 9 and we'll take those questions.
Well, it's an important question, Joe. There are at least 5 pillars to the bill that was signed into law by the president on March 27th. First of all, a Marshall Plan for hospitals and clinics across our country. Very importantly, and most people don't realize the impacts to our hospitals and clinics, because especially at hospitals, they have stopped all elective surgeries, and the dollars that come in as a result of that, there are heavy losses. Our hospitals are really hemorrhaging revenues. So hospitals and clinics, there's a huge backstop. It's almost $370 billion to hospitals and clinics for that purpose, but also for supplies and other things. There is a cash transfer that is going out to people across the country, both Social Security beneficiaries, and they're up to $75,000 of income. People will receive $1,200 per person, married couples $2,400 plus $500 for each child. It's based on either your 2019 tax return or your 2018 tax return. Unemployment insurance. unemployment insurance is, as you know so well, Joe, is operated by the states. Each state has a basic minimum. In California, I think it's $435 a week. In the legislation, we added $600 on top of that. Now, the unemployment offices are given 10 million plus claims in the last 2 weeks. They are inundated, but people should go online and file. Very importantly, we included those that are in certain parts of our economy, in the work sector, that don't are not covered by unemployment insurance, including gig workers, contract workers. They are eligible for unemployment benefits. Another pillar is the area to address small businesses. We want to keep them whole and their employees. Now, for the 300 some billion dollars in forgivable loans, that system, in a matter of hours, those dollars have already been used up. So when you ask what COVID 4.0 in terms of legislation, we have to provide a lot more funding. Obviously, small businesses are the backbone of our economy. And very importantly, states and local governments, and I fought hard for this, state and local governments are obviously taking on huge responsibilities with a multiplier in all the different areas, and we want to make sure that state and local governments receive the funds that they need, because everyone has had to ramp up, and of course this is where the rubber meets the road in our local communities. So those are at least five major pillars of the legislation, and but we're going to have to do more.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman. I do want to take questions from folks who are listening, and we do have a number of those coming in. So let me start with Bunny from Mountain View, who has a question, I believe, about paid sick leave. And obviously, if we can't rummage up the details today, Congresswoman, your office and my office can work to make sure we get back to folks. There will be an opportunity at the end of the call for people to leave both comments and questions. But in real time, we can make sure that we answer questions that are possibly answered today. And if not, we'll make arrangements to get back to people. Bunny from Mountain View, you're on. Can you hear us loud and clear?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Joe. I want to thank you all for putting this forward for the community. And thank you, Joe Simidian, for your years of service, and Anna Hsu as well, and the medical practitioners there. Thank you for everything you are doing to help us all and to understand better. Here's my question. I work for one of the cities in the county of Santa Clara, and I'm a union shop chief steward. We are now bargaining with the city for different issues that are going on in terms of the employee population, who many who are not essential workers, who are at home staying in place, and also do not do telework from home because the jobs they perform are dependent on being at their work location. Mm-hmm. So we have many employees who are at home not doing telework. Then there are employees doing telework, and then there are our essential employees who are out there in the community providing the services to keep the community going.
And Bunny,
so my
the question
is, I'm getting, the question is, I had to give a little background. Thank you for your patience. And for our beloved Anna Hsu, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, it states there are six different qualifying reasons for paid sick leave. The first one states, the leave for the employee can be is subject to a federal, state, or local quarantine or isolation order related to COVID-19. We're trying to figure out whether the local quarantine language that is used in this legislation or isolation order is referring to a quarantine because someone may be asymptomatic or someone may have symptoms, so therefore they should not be at work, or whether it covers people, as I was stating before, who were told to stay in place, and if they have no work or telework, then...
Thanks, Bunny, for that question. I think it's an indication of just how complicated and detailed some of this can be, Congresswoman. Can you respond today at all? And by the way, Bunny, if we cut you off prematurely, my apologies, but we are available to follow up on your question with the Congresswoman's office if you reach out to my office tomorrow. Congresswoman?
Well, I would just say to Bunny, thank you for asking the question. It's an excellent one. The congressional intent relative to paid sick leave is, and the entire bill is all related to the virus. So if someone has to stay home because they are sick, then they are covered. If they have to stay home to take care of someone in their family relative to the virus, then they are covered. My overall goal is that we put into place nationally paid family leave, paid sick leave. These are policies that we have struggled to put into place so that everyone is covered, and they should be. But any further information, I'll work with Supervisor Simidian to get your name and how we, well, I know your name, but how I can get back to you. And lastly, I want to thank you for your work as a union chief steward, because as you negotiate, there are many people that you hold in your hand that will benefit from those negotiations. So thank you.
Thank you, Congresswoman, and again to Bunny and to any of our other callers. There will be a chance to leave a message or ask a question at the end of the call today. And please feel free to reach out to our offices, both the Supervisor Joe Simidian and Congresswoman Anna Eshoo, and we'll try and get more specific answers to these very specific questions. Meanwhile, we do have a call from Barry in Cupertino with a question about small business relief. Barry, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. First of all, thank you for having this. It's an excellent thing to be able to get questions asked that you need to ask. And I would only say, first of all, just a comment to maybe give the website every so often for people that are just getting online. And another one, my actual question is, I'm a small proprietor or single proprietor, sole proprietor, whatever you want to call it, and I have basically shut down my business because of this. I do work on the outside of houses, window washing, power washing, things like that. But wanted to know, first of all, can I work? And second of all, is there, you know, because I've stopped, like I have some money saved up, but it's quickly dwindling away. Am I able to apply for unemployment insurance based on that? Or, you know, just what kind of help is there for me?
Well, first of all, Barry, thank you for your question. Number one, you will, based on your income, again, up to $75,000 a year in income, you would be eligible for $1,200 plus $500 for any children you may have. If you're married, it would be double that amount, $2,400. That's a one-time cash transfer. And the IRS has your direct deposit information, and that's the way you would receive it. Yes, you are eligible for unemployment benefits. As I said, I worked very hard on making sure that those workers in our economy that are have the type of business that you just described, those that are contract workers, those that are gig workers, that they qualify for unemployment insurance. So you should go online and file for that. So those are two very important issues to keep you afloat. I think Supervisor Simitian needs to answer the question as to the stay-at-home order that's in place in Santa Clara County and six Bay Area counties. They have made the determination of who can be out working and who cannot. So I'm not so sure I can answer that question. Joe, can you?
Sure. Thank you, Congresswoman. Let me just say for the caller and for all the listeners, this is a obviously a key question, which is what are and are not essential businesses, what are or are not essential activities. And again, a reminder, you know, there's lots of important work that we'd all like to be doing, but that probably doesn't qualify as essential within the meaning of the public health order issued by our public health officer and the public health officers around the county. For the caller, if I understand it correctly, it's a power washing operation, small business, probably does not qualify as an essential business under the circumstances. Many of these kinds of home maintenance type things have been curtailed unless there's clearly a matter of public health and safety. But the way you can determine in this instance is to take a look at the Public Health Department's webpage. That's Santa Clara County Public Health Coronavirus. Just Google it up and it'll be right there. The entire order is there, and if you make your way through the order, it will describe, and it has some frequently asked questions to try and make sure that the information is a little less legalese and a little more plain English. The other thing is, if you give my office a call tomorrow at 408-299-5050, 408-299-5050, that's for the 408 folks, for this particular caller, we try and help you walk through that if possible, but your best bet is to start with the web page. Want to try and do another couple of questions very quickly before we get to Drs. Maldonado and Dr. Adams, who are on the phone with us. We have a question from Carol in Mountain View about how to centralize things that are needed, like masks, toilet paper. Carol, go ahead if you're still with us. And if we've lost Carol, we'll go to Lewis in Mountain View, who has a supply chain question. Lewis, are you still with us?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Thanks. What was your question, please?
Yes, so I've been working hard these past 2 weeks to identify viable factories in China that can produce regulated PPE. And I've identified a source that has a FDA certifiable N95 mask. Now my challenge is matching up supply with demand here. Not that there isn't, there's plenty of demand, but finding the right channels, a buying group where they can purchase in mass quantities. Do you have any recommendations or connections of who to best go through there?
Congresswoman Eshoo, thoughts?
Well, I think first of all, through the public health department in Santa Clara County is an important place to start because for all the obvious reasons. But if it's something that you would like to share with me in my office, I can certainly get that information to the hospitals in our district. Certainly, Valley Medical Center, our clinics. El Camino Hospital, certainly Stanford Hospital, as well as Lucille Packer Children's Hospital, and to the north, Sequoia Hospital. And I'd be happy to follow through on that. But we're going to need, Lewis, to get your name, to get your contact number, and so that we can get more the important information that you believe you have relative to supplies for our hospitals, and I'd be happy to forward that. But I would start with the public health department in Santa Clara County because they do distribute.
Okay, okay. Is there an email address in your office that I can reach that I can provide all the background information?
SU@house.gov.
And I would add that you can also reach out to my office. We'll try and connect you with folks. The Hospital Council here in California has a local county chapter. That might be a way to centralize your outreach to them because they serve and represent all of the county's hospitals. By that I mean all of the hospitals in our county, not just Santa Clara County as a county entity. And if you come to my email at supervisor.samidian@bos.sccgov.org, sorry for the long address, but it's supervisor.samidian@bos.sccgov.org, we'll try and channel your inquiries in the right direction. And one last question from Charlene in Palo Alto. Charlene, are you still with us? And if not, Marie in Sunnyvale, who has a question. Marie, are you still with us?
I'm still here, yes. Thank you,
so
Joe, and thank you. Yes. Can you hear me? Okay.
Hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Joe and Anna and Dr. Montanelvo. And Dr. Adams, you're our heroes. I work at one of the 7 emergency assistance agencies in Santa Clara County in Sunnyvale. And the issue that we've seen now is even though the state and the county and our city have passed moratoriums on evictions, we're getting people walking in our door who have been evicted or getting eviction notices. The nonprofits who are trying to help people with rental assistance, our agency alone has had 8 times the number of people applying in need of April rent assistance. The moratorium gives us time to be able to process those. We understand landlords need to get paid, of course, as well. But what help is there to enforce and communicate the moratorium on evictions across Santa Clara County so that we can get everything in place to help people?
Congresswoman Eshoo, do you want to weigh in, or do you want to punt that one to me?
I can do something from mention something from kind of a 36,000 foot view, and that is that in the legislation, we put in very important dollars to assist local government with money relative to homelessness. But I think that Joe is better poised to answer. The issue of what eviction or non-eviction mandates that have gone out relative to the county. I know that several cities have put that in place. I don't think that it is, I might be wrong, I don't know if every, I should just say I don't know if every city in Santa Clara has done that. So Joe, can you pick up on that and maybe enlarge on it?
Sure, and let me just first give a shout-out to our county's legal counsel. Our county counsel's office brought this issue forward to our Board of Supervisors at our last meeting. I made the motion. Supervisor Wasserman seconded it, and all 5 of us supported an eviction moratorium for residential renters and for small business commercial renters that runs through May 31st, the last day of May. So we have April and May, and to Marie's point, we're obviously going to need to think through a little bit more, okay, what happens next? But that was both to provide some immediate protection for both residential and commercial renters, and also, frankly, to buy us some time to think this one through and to see how things developed. Marie, one of the points that I made at the board meeting and that I think your call underscores is how important it is to publicize the fact that that protection exists, both so that responsible property owners will know that that's the law now and that they need to comply, and also so that renters, whether they be commercial or residential, understand their rights. Now, Anna raised Congresswoman Eshoo, forgive me, raised a very good point, which is unusually this particular eviction protection, this moratorium on evictions, applies not just to the unincorporated parts of Santa Clara County, but to all 15 cities and towns. The urgency of the situation allowed us to provide eviction protection for every single city and town in the county. And so those protections are there. We will wait and see what else comes from the state. But in the meantime, we need to ramp up our community outreach efforts so that people know what protections are in place and what the rules do and don't allow. Last thing, Marie, is if you'll follow up with my office, we'll try and find out what we can do in the way of resources for enforcement and to make sure that people are abiding by the law, which I think was sort of the bottom line takeaway once we make sure everybody knows the rules of the road. I'm going to cut it off there, Congresswoman Eshoo. Thank you for being with us. Really appreciate both your patience, but particularly your insight and your work on these issues in Washington on behalf of our region. And again, it may be a personal bias of mine, but I just so appreciate the fact that you have the experience of 10 years as a county supervisor, because I know you know what it is we're struggling with here in our county and know how to provide us with help. So thank you again, and if you can stay with us.
Thank you, Joe, for bringing us all together. And I think the word together is the operational word. Even though we are isolated, we really are all in this together. And to all of the listeners, I hope it's a source of confidence to each one of you how closely we're all working together to address all of the needs of people during this really critical time. So I would say stay healthy, stay strong, and stay home.
All right. Thank you for that. Before we go to our final two participants, and thank them again for their patience and being with us, I did just want to share the results of the poll. We have thousands of people on the call, so the poll results are edifying, because we asked what people's highest concern was, understanding that they might well and probably were concerned about all these issues, whether it was at-risk or elderly patients, whether it was the ability of hospitals and healthcare systems to keep up, whether it was the loss of jobs in the economy, or whether it was the educational opportunities that were being lost as schools and universities are closed down. I'll just share with you that 21% of the respondents said they were most concerned about elderly and at-risk relatives and friends. 54% were most concerned about the ability of our hospitals and our healthcare system and healthcare providers to keep up with the challenge. Four different choices, but a clear majority most concerned about that particular issue. 20% who expressed the greatest degree of concern about the loss of jobs and the impact on our economy, and 5% who were concerned about, most concerned about the loss of educational opportunity for students. So thank you for sharing your opinions. That's helpful. And it tells me, importantly, that the message about flattening the curve so that our hospitals can manage the level of need is in fact getting out there, and that's good news, and certainly we could look for some good news. All right, now, we're going to go now to Dr. Adams and Dr. Maldonado. Let me just thank them again, and for folks who are just joining us on the call, there are probably another 15, 20 minutes here. And we'll ask you to queue up by pressing 9 if you have a question. We're going to go to Dr. Mark Adams, who's the Chief Medical Officer at El Camino Hospital. And Dr. Adams is someone who's got, probably 30 years of experience at the executive level in leadership positions in healthcare systems, not only here in Santa Clara County, but in the Pacific Northwest and in the central Midwest of the country. So he brings a regional perspective, as I mentioned earlier. Then we've got Dr. Yvonne Maldonado, who was kind enough to weigh in earlier with some information, but she is the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Stanford Medical and also the medical director of Infection Prevention and Control at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford. And she's got international experience that helps inform her judgment as well. So thank you to you both. Let me start with Dr. Maldonado and just ask if you have a take on how effective the current social distancing measures have been in slowing down the spread of COVID-19 and the coronavirus. Dr. Maldonado?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Supervisor Chavinian, for allowing me to speak. So, yes, we are, as Dr. Cody mentioned, we are cautiously optimistic about our ability to really flatten this curve. So we've been tracking along with others here. We have a large group of people who are tracking the number of cases coming into our hospital, being tested, and being admitted to the hospital, as well as going home and going to the intensive care unit. We've also been working around the county with other hospitals to try to understand how many people are being tested around the county. And our indication is that the curve seems to be flattening at this point, where, again, we aren't 100% sure, but we think that, the work that's being done is making a big impact, and that's really great that people are really doing this and that the counties really step forward very early on to try to minimize the effect of this virus. Now, having said that, that also means it may take a little bit longer for this curve to swell off because it's not going to be a sharp upward curve that then drops right down. It may be a slower curve. So it may take us a little bit longer till we see the end of this epidemic in the Bay Area.
Thank you, Dr. Maldonado. My layman's summary on that one is progress being made, but we're not out of the woods yet. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, absolutely, but there's hope.
Good. Well, we could use some of that, so thank you for that. Let me go next to Dr. Adams. And Dr. Adams, you know, this issue of capacity in our healthcare system is one that Dr. Cody raised early on in the call. It's clearly a concern for our listeners. In fact, given four choices, more than half of our listeners said that was their perhaps their greatest concern. I have to ask, what's the capacity at El Camino Hospital in terms of treating patients with the virus, and what procedures or efforts are underway to temporarily expand your maximum capacity?
Sure. Well, yeah, thank you. And by the way, thank you, Supervisor Simidian, for keeping your constituents informed. This is, I think, is really great. You're doing a great job. And Congresswoman Eschew as well, great work for us. We really appreciate that. I did also want to just point out, and I'll answer your question in a second, is that, you know, we really need to thank our physicians and nurses who, and others as well, who are coming to work every day. You know, they're risking their lives, and they're doing it because they're dedicated, and I think that that's really been great. And the other thing, that the personal protective equipment, I've been amazed at the number of people in our community that have come forward with donations, with actually people are making shields for us. It's really been an incredible community coming together and helping us. For capacity, you know, because we have cut back on elective surgeries and other procedures, you know, that was really the purpose of that was to provide extra capacity. And so we really have been, we have an incident command center that is ongoing 24/7, and we keep very close track of the number of ventilators, the number of rooms, our negative pressure rooms. And so far, we've been very fortunate that we've maintained plenty of capacity. And so at least for us now, that's not a concern. And as Dr. Maldonado said, as the curve flattens out, which it appears to be doing, that does allow us to maintain that capacity. And it may be a little longer before we're through, but on the other hand, we don't expect to see the catastrophes like New York City or New Orleans where the capacity really got quickly exceeded.
Well, thank you. That is reassuring, and thank you for those efforts. I do want to go to questions, and again, if you have a question for either Dr. Adams or Dr. Maldonado, they're really sort of the on-the-ground observers and participants, and a very helpful resource. So thank you for being with us today. Just press 9 if you're a listener still on the line, and notwithstanding the fact that the call has been extended, we have a great many folks who are still on the line, so clearly there's a level of interest. Jackie in Sunnyvale has a question about how to get the antibody test. Jackie, are you still on the line?
Yes.
And your question, please.
How do I get, as a member of the general public, and or what are the protocols to get the Stanford antibody test, and where are other places where I could get the antibody test?
Dr. Maldonado, are you able to respond to that?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. As I mentioned earlier, and maybe some of you weren't on the call, but we just received FDA approval for an antibody test at Stanford. But as you can imagine, we are just starting to figure out how to get that into the clinical setting. What we're hoping to do is start to test our healthcare workers first, because we really want to know if they're going to be able to keep working and keep them healthy so that they can be on the front lines. I was walking by the hospital last night, an evening hike with my husband by ourselves, and the hospital parking lot was full. So we know that these are people who are putting themselves online every day and wanted to make sure that we know their results as soon as possible. But we are trying to build out ways to get, for example, dried blood spots where people could just do a little finger prick and put some blood on a little a piece of paper and then filter paper and maybe be able to mail those in. But that's not going to happen right away. And as you've heard before, the main issue right now is just to keep yourself in isolation. And if you think you're sick, you can come in to Stanford and other places for testing for actual infection. The antibody test will help you know if you've had infection already, and will be useful in the longer term, but immediately may not be as helpful as the staying sheltering at home and or reporting yourself so that you know if you're infected or not, to prevent yourself from spreading the disease to others. So we hope to get some more information and working with businesses and others to try to build home test kits in the next few weeks or so.
Thank you, Dr. Maldonado. And Jackie, I heard you loud and clear about the desire for members of the general public to be able to access the antibody test. I'm going to encourage you to keep your eye on the Santa Clara County Public Health website. They're going to be updating their information, and I'm going to ask my office as well to make sure that our resource page posts information when the antibody test is generally available for members of the public. So thank you for the question, and we'll stay on it. We've got Maggie in Mountain View who's got a question about pets. Maggie, are you still with us?
I've listened to all the programs regarding this problem, and I've never heard anyone ask if pets can absorb this.
So the question then, Maggie, is whether pets are susceptible to the virus. So Dr. Adams, Dr. Maldonado, can your dog, your cat, any other pets, can they carry the virus? And if so, what are the implications? That's the question.
Yes. So this is Dr. Maldonado. We know that there are normal coronaviruses, not this virus, that many animals and humans have. These are cause other symptoms in, like cold-like symptoms in people. And we know that animals have their own coronaviruses. They're not the same as this virus. They won't be transmitted to people. And this virus does not infect animals that we know of yet. There may be some indication that they might infect some animals, but we don't, these viruses cannot be transmitted by pets. So we should really be comfortable around our pets. Obviously, if somebody would infect the pet, that is put a cough or sneeze on a dog or a cat, the fur of that animal might be have particles. So we have to make sure we still keep our animals socially distanced as well, because that's a possibility. But the animals themselves don't carry the virus and can't infect humans.
Thank you so much. We have a question now from Jim in Cupertino, which is about the capacity of our hospitals, both now and in the future. Jim, are you still with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go right ahead, Jim.
Okay, yeah, first question was, I appreciated the response from the El Camino guy. I forgot his name. Sorry.
That's Dr. Adams.
I believe, thank you, Dr. Adams. Thank you. I heard that there wasn't a concern for El Camino Hospital, which was interesting. I wasn't sure about the county as a whole. Of course. That was question number one. I did have a follow-up question for Dr. Maldonado about whether this virus is mutating, and if at all you were exposed to it and recovered from it, could you be reinfected? Thank you.
Dr. Maldonado, why don't I let you start, and then Dr. Adams and I will talk a little bit about the capacity of our hospital system. So Dr. Maldonado, to you.
Yes, thank you. So that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. The answer is we don't know. We know that with the usual coronaviruses that cause colds, that there is a little bit of immunity that you can develop, but that over time, that appears to drop off, and then you can become infected again in the next cold season. And so it'll be really important with these antibody tests that we're looking at now is to understand which people have antibodies, do they protect you from infection, and how long would that protection last? So we don't know the answer yet, and that's why we're being very careful about making sure that people are still sheltering at home, even if we think they might have been infected and maybe over it, because we don't know whether they're protected from reinfection or if they can infect other people, even if they're immune now. So that's something we are desperately trying to figure out as soon as possible, and we hope in the next few months we should have that information. Certainly, if we think the virus will go away and come back in another season, we would hope to have that answer by then.
Thanks so much. Dr. Adams, comment or observation about the issue of hospital capacity countywide, as I understood the question.
Yes, happy to answer that. We are all in touch every day with the county, and so the county is taking the lead on tracking and coordinating bed availability, ventilator availability, PPE availability. So that is all being coordinated in the county. And so we do have a close watch on capacity. And as I said, so far, we have managed to maintain, sufficient capacity. Interestingly, of course, people are still getting heart attacks, cancers, strokes. And so we also need to take care of all those people as well. And we are. And I think sometimes people are forgetting that all those other, things are still happening, and so we also have to take that into account.
Thanks so much, Doctor. And the question came from Jim in Cupertino. Jim, if you're still on the line, the one other thing I would suggest both for you but for all of our callers and listeners today is that hospital dashboard that we referenced early in the conversation today is available at the Santa Clara County Public Health Department's coronavirus webpage. So if you just Google up Santa Clara County Public Health Coronavirus, there'll be a dashboard that's accessible there, and I have a copy printed out in front of me right now, and it will tell you the number of acute hospital beds, the number of ICU intensive care unit beds that we've got, how many we've got surged, how many ventilators are available. So all of that information is there on a dashboard, and we have time for just one or two quick questions and answers. So let me go to Holly in Palo Alto, who has a question about ventilators. Holly, are you still with us? And Holly in Palo Alto, are you still with us? If not, we'll go to Elaine in Palo Alto, who has a question about the case rate here in our county. Elaine, are you with us?
Hey, I'm here.
Thanks. Hi, Bill. How's it going? We're hanging in there. How
about you? Good. So I had two questions, and hopefully they're kind of quick. The first one is whether the county is now recommending that we all wear face masks when we go outside. And number two is why is the number of cases in Santa Clara County and the number of deaths higher than other counties in the Bay Area?
I'm going to let both of our doctors weigh in. Who'd like to go first? Dr. Adams, Dr. Maldonado?
Yes. This is Dr. Adams. Just I did want to comment about masking. It is advisable to wear a mask when people are out and about, but it's really vitally important to understand that the mask does not protect the wearer of the mask. The mask is designed to promote social distancing further by preventing the wearer to infect someone else in case they're an asymptomatic carrier. And in fact, you know, people wearing scarves and cloth masks, that was all tried during the 1918 pandemic. And it actually made things worse for individuals because the susceptibility of the individual wearing the mask is actually higher if they are exposed. So if they're using a cloth, you know, homemade mask. But the idea is you're protecting others from you infecting them if you're wearing a mask. So I think that's something that's really important. But there is an advantage to that to try to protect others.
And Dr. Maldonado, the question about our case rate here in Santa Clara County?
Yes, that's actually, again, a very good question. And we and others have been tracking the numbers and projecting out models of when the disease will peak out and start dropping off. And I would tell you that there's a number of different places, and again, Santa Clara County website is a good place to look. But when you look at the number of cases, you have to remember that a lot of that depends on the testing capacity. So the more people you test, the more cases you might identify. And we know that in Santa Clara County, there are you know, for example, at Stanford, we've tested over 10,000 people already since the beginning of March. So there's going to be just more testing in certain areas than others just because of the capacity to test, and then therefore you will see higher case rates. The other thing to remember is that some counties are larger than others. So, for example, in Santa Clara County, we are almost 2 million population. So when you adjust for the number of tests done and the number of people in the population, the rates are not that different. There there are some differences that are probably explained by differences in the risk groups in different counties, but we think the rates are not that different, except that there's differences in testing rates and how many people live in each county.
Thank you so much. Any last words, Dr. Adams or Dr. Maldonado, before I move to the close here?
Well, this is Dr. Adams. One thing is that the CDC published an article on Friday that basically cites Santa Clara County as the model for how to deal with this. And I think Dr. Cody and her team really deserve a lot of credit. I think 10 years from now, people will be looking back, and if we have another incident, they'll say, well, what did Santa Clara County do? It really is a model for how to deal with this sort of thing. So I think that's good. You know, one last thought, you know, this is difficult for everyone. I talked to my daughter today, who's a geologist, and the seismic activity has profoundly decreased, caused by humans. the atmosphere is cleaner than the air than it's ever been in California. And so, you know, we will get through this, but there are, you know, a few things to perhaps uplift us a little bit while we're sort of working through this.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Maldonado, any closing thoughts before I move to the wrap-up?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for being interested and involved, and I'd like to thank Supervisor Simidian for his ability to educate everybody about this issue. And again, to my colleagues here at the hospital who've been working so hard, and all the hospitals in the area. But finally, I want to end with a note of hope, because I think we, as you heard before, there are, you know, we will get through this together. And we are rapidly learning more and more about this particular virus and how we can treat it, how we can prevent it. And I feel very confident that all of us working together through this will overcome this challenge.
Well, thank you both for the work you all are doing as we work our way through one of the toughest periods in addressing the coronavirus challenge. A thank you to all of our panelists and participants today, Dr. Sarah Cody, Congresswoman Eshoo, of course, and Drs. Maldonado and Adams. Before we wrap up, for those who are still on the line, and there are a good number, thank you, I wanted to let you know that given the response we got to this first call, we will have at least two additional telephone town halls like this scheduled in the weeks ahead. We want to keep folks informed. I also want to learn from you what you're all seeing and hearing and facing out in the community. So our next call will be 3 weeks from today on Sunday, April 26th, and then 3 weeks later on Sunday, May 17th, so that we have an opportunity to check in every few weeks. If you know someone who didn't get a chance to listen in, or if you joined us late, please take a look at my office's COVID-19 webpage. And again, you can just go online and find the Supervisor Simidian webpage. There will be a COVID-19 page there, and we will have this conversation available for folks to download. If you have comments, suggestions about how we can do a better job, please feel free to offer them. Questions that didn't get addressed, when this call wraps up, you'll hear a tone, and when you hear that tone, if you just stay on the line and offer your comment or question that at that time, it should be recorded, and I will make sure that I get a chance to listen to them all. And the last thing I just wanted to say on a slightly more personal note is that I know these are challenging times, and I know that many of you are being asked to, well, make significant sacrifices and endure a lot. But I also know that in challenging times, we have an opportunity to let our best selves step up and show ourselves as worthy of the moment. So thank you to all of you who have done that. I think this really is an opportunity to summon the better angels of our nature. And it will be hard. It has been hard, no question about it. But I think if each of us does what we can, we can contribute, we can volunteer, we can simply phone a friend to check in on them, as you've heard over and over again, we can just stay at home. I think we will look back at this time as one that, frankly, was uplifting in terms of the kind of folks we are and the kind of community that we have created. So thank you all for your participation here today. Please stay well. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. And be in touch if we can be of any help in the intervening weeks. But we will be doing this again 3 weeks from now, and we hope to have our technical difficulties resolved at that time. Be well, and thanks again.